Bench. The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Erline.
Good Friday morning, everybody. John and Lance along with Dell, and off we go. And I don't remember. Well, maybe one. Who was the kind of a little bit heavy pitcher for the Astros back in the day that gave up an 11-run first?
Do you remember? Jason Jennings. Father's Day Massacre.
Father's Day Massacre.
We got Father's Day coming
Jason
up.
Jason Jennings.
Yeah.
That inning was... Okay, which inning was worse? Where you drop two fly balls, hit a batter, and a run comes in. Walk a batter and a run comes in, and then they double and bring another. After you had the lead late in the game, and they destroy you, which inning was worse, that or Jason Jennings?
Well, the Jason Jennings, because you knew you lost in one inning. Like,
well, you still had to get
through nine innings. Like, oh my God, we still got to keep playing this game. Well, now.
That was the same thing.
That was just gross. Like, that was just gross. That was the bullpen reminding everybody, hey.
What about the drop pop-ups?
Yeah, I know. That was bad, too. But
what
I mean,
about the hit by
what
pitches?
About a Nolan not... Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's the bullpen saying, hey, just want to remind you guys how sketchy we are. Blake Taylor, uh-oh.
And Nolan. Yeah, remind me. I want everybody to raise their hand when they think a Nolan should come in with runners on base.
Never. Well, Nolan simply cannot throw strikes right now with his fastball. He cannot.
Oh, well, he
cannot get
now
his fastball
his
over as a strike.
He had to, you know what? They said... He was out after he walked the next guy, after he hit the guy before, they said, Enoli, shoulder.
Well, he was
shoulder.
He was doing this, and maybe it is. Maybe he does have something wrong. All I know is that he cannot throw a fastball
for a strike.
Couldn't
have come at a better time because they didn't have anybody warming up.
No, yeah, it could have. It could have come at a better time about 20 pitches earlier.
Well, before he came out.
Before coming out.
Tight. I can't throw tonight.
I mean, you know, you get your little curveball that you can't. You can't snap off enough that barely hits the hitter. Dude. And now all of a sudden a run comes in, and you walk the next guy in, you go 3-2, and you throw a fastball foot out of the zone, and it's low
Every pitch he throws, like, it dives like 3 feet outside the zone. Callis even said it. He said when Vasquez gets up there and swings at the first one that hits the dirt, he's like, Todd Callis is like, I don't know if he's aware of Enoli. I don't think he knows about Enoli because he even said, why would you swing?
No, but that's Enoli, but bad start from Greinke. Belak didn't do his job. No. Taylor didn't do his job. And Enoli didn't do his job. The first four pitchers didn't do their jobs.
You needed one more out. You don't bring Enoli in with two on. You just don't. That's just basic baseball. I think it's one of the unwritten rules, and Dusty broke it. You don't bring Enoli in with runners on base, period, because he just can't handle it. What's his strikeout to walk ratio this year, Lance?
I don't know.
15-16.
Wow. I mean, seriously, that's a guy that right now you really need to just put him in the minors and just work on. He's just going to have.
They did. They clearly, did. They sent him down.
Yeah, when he was injured.
No, and then he went down to the minors, and then they had to bring him back.
Then if he's still injured, then you got to get him off the roster because Joe Smith, because
Brooks Raley, I get it,
but get him off the roster. I mean, Lance McCullers is coming soon. Move down Odorizzi, and we'll be good. McCullers had a good start for those who are interested. 4 innings, 2 hits, 1 run down with the Skeeters. I think it was with the Skeeters, right? It was local. He didn't go on the road. So he had a good start yesterday. Enoli just can't find the zone. He's hurt. It needs to locate fastball. He's got major control issues. Enoli has to go. But this is once again, yesterday was a stark reminder.
Wait, I have to correct something. It's 15-17, not 15.
Oh, even worse. This is a stark reminder though yesterday that when you have one of your starters that you count on, when Zach Stinky shows up, you have to have guys who can pick him up. Because you did have a chance to win the game, despite Zach having a bad start. He did not get an OQS, an Odorizzi quality start, which is at least 5 innings with 3 runs or less. He was worse. But that's okay. they had a chance to pick him up because they had a lead. The Astros had a lead thanks to their big fifth and sixth innings, and they were in position. And your bullpen was terrible. Belak sucked. Blake Taylor didn't do his job, although he didn't have that long. And Anoli, you know, frankly, shouldn't have even been in the game in that position. And then, you know, and then the Red Sox bullpen found their, you know, found their mojo after, after what, the sixth inning, and it was over. There was, unbelievably, you had a total of 13 runs scored in the fifth and sixth innings total between the two teams. The pitching staffs got raked in those two innings, and Yordan continues to hit the ball well.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good sign. But Astros lose, you know, soft sweep. That's fine. You take 3 of 4. I'm fine with it. That's what you came in to do.
Yeah, and on the road, you win a series. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it's overall, in a general sense, it was a very good trip into Boston overall. It's just yesterday you got a little reminder about the pen, that you've had starters doing such an amazing job that you had limited time with the pen. And yesterday was a reminder, oh, hey, if one of your starters isn't very good and you've got to go multiple innings with your bullpen, you're in major trouble. There are very few instances, you can count them on one hand, where you have been able to count on your bullpen for 5 or more innings where they did a good job. It's a very, very small amount of times in this season. And yesterday was another reminder that even with 8 runs, you know, 8 runs wasn't enough. 8 runs wasn't enough.
Mm-mm.
So Astros lose that one. But good news yesterday was that Lance McCullers had his little swagger back in his minor league appearance. Looked very, very good, was very sharp, and it looks like that's a one and done, and that he's going to be headed back to the big club in short order. So that's good.
Yep. So they get out of there, they go to Minnesota, and then they get back here for Texas, and I think that's the plan for McCullers. We'll see. It's still going to be interesting to see what they do with the and I've heard a lot of people saying, well, what about a six-man rotation? I don't believe that. Listen.
Yeah, pitchers love being thrown off their rhythms.
Yeah.
I'm sure Zach Greinke won't have any issue with his rhythm being disrupted.
Whatever. Oh, I get to pitch less. I don't have to. Whatever. All right.
Oh, cool. He strikes me as a guy who, if Wednesdays is his day that he has a slice of pizza, then he wants his pizza on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yes or no?
So you're saying he's autistic. Okay.
No, I'm saying he has a schedule, and he likes to stay on his schedule is what I'm telling you.
Okay.
Zach likes things the way that they're supposed to be. Why were my keys moved?
Well,
I mean, ADHD, I mean, not ADHD, but OCD, like everyone acts like, I'm so OCD. Man, I'm so OCD. No, nobody who says they're OCD is OCD.
Right.
Obsessive compulsive disorder is a real thing.
Yeah.
And it's probably somebody like Zach Greinke who, you know, has to have his glove in a certain place, I don't think McCullers would like it. I don't think major league veterans are going to like being thrown off a day. I don't see it at all.
Yeah. Well, it went from a 4-man to a 5-man rotation, and they, you know, adapt. No, they're not going to do that because you know what? They need too much help in the bullpen.
No, yeah.
You got to have enough. This is desperate times call for desperate measures. And I just got a feeling it's probably going to be Garcia. We'll see. We'll see what he does with this next start. And there may be a you know, where you can't take him out of the road.
Maybe the laughing stock of baseball. You might see an ESPN article or MLB Network thing about the Astros. Guess which team coming up next? A team is taking out one of the hottest pitchers in baseball and moving him to the pen. We'll tell you what team has decided to move that starter who's 4-0 over his last 4 starts when we come back. Like, that is the weirdest sounding thing. 4-0 with a 1.5 ERA. Which starter's 4-0 with a 1.5 ERA in his last 4 and is headed to the pen? We're going to talk about it here on Baseball Tonight when we come back.
Well, by that time, he's going to be 6-0. By that time, he's going to be 6-0.
Yeah.
By after his next start. So, yeah. Hey, listen, they're going to.
That's going to be a weird sounding segment that they do on Baseball Tonight with a 4-0, with a 5-0 guy with a 1.46 ERA has to go to the pen. And everyone goes, what about these other pitchers that aren't as good? What about Urquidy? What about McCullers, who just got back? What about Odorizzi, who they don't even have a tie to this guy? Nah, man, Garcia's got to go. You got to take your hottest pitcher out.
I saw a story yesterday. Maybe we'll do it on the other side. I saw a story yesterday that this looks like it's got Houston Astros written all over it. All over it. I'm telling you, because we've seen they ain't afraid to go after a Verlander. They ain't afraid to go after a Greinke. So we'll see. I'll tell you on the other side. There's a guy out there that they're talking about could possibly be on the trade block. That'll be next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. If you want to get in, 713-780-3776. I want to talk right now about my peeps over at Chastang Ford. I'm telling you, these are the nicest people. When you're dealing with the Chastangs, if you've ever done business with the Chastangs, I'm telling you, you've got nothing but nice things to say about them. They're going to bend over backwards to do what is best for you. They do not, and it was ingrained. I mean, so many times, listen, we don't upsell. We don't try to gouge. That's what you can't buy online from other dealerships, because they got to have you into the store so that they can add on, so they can try to sell you, so that they can put add-ons on there, make it $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 more than you had originally agreed to. And that's just not the case at Chastang Ford. When you pick whatever package that you want for your vehicle. And oh, by the way, now's a great time to order and get exactly what you want instead of getting the package that's delivered from Ford. You get what you want in your Ford car or truck when you order now, and wait for it a couple, if it takes a couple of months, oh well, that's okay. But you get what you want, and they don't add anything on. This happens every single day. They've also got it in stock right now, inventory on the lot that you can choose from if you want to get there, or you can do it all online at ChastangFord.com. It's on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown Chastang Ford.
This is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
You know, I know they got going to get roughed up, you know, like, you know, he had a tough outing. Then we pulled him because he was having some shoulder issues. And as a young player, you know, you get scared, and you get scared for him.
I was scared. Everybody in the build, the guy in the fourth row was scared. He was going to hit him with the baseball. And Noli is awful right now. Awful. He can't throw the ball where it's bad. It's horrible. I mean, unless they swing a crap, he's not getting anybody out. Unless they're chasing pitches. And if I'm batting against the Noli, I'm just put my bat in the shoulder and just let him walk me. That's all. Or hit me. Whatever. He's going to do something. I don't know how you bring that dude back until he can throw. I don't how long in the minors does he have to prove that he can throw strikes? He's so wild.
There's something going on, obviously, with his fundamentals and with his release. I mean, maybe there's something going on also, obviously, with injury. Because they had the trainer come out and he left, and they still needed some time to warm up. But it was clearly something's going on with Noli. I mean, he's already not he's not a guy with the best control in the world. But at the same time, if your mechanics are that screwed up that you just can't locate anywhere near the outer portion of the zone without throwing it 8 to 10 inches outside and below the knees, then there's something going on with his mechanics and his release point and all that stuff. And that's up to Strom or their minor league instructors to get it fixed. So somebody's got to do that. And if injury's playing a part of it too, then get him healthy. But don't bring him back out. Until he can get a couple of 1, 2, 3 innings back-to-back, until he has that capability, there's no reason to have him out on the field. You're doing yourself a disservice, obviously. But you're also doing that pitcher a disservice, because I think his confidence has got to really be rattled at this point.
Yeah.
So don't even throw him out there. No. I mean, I would expect them to send him to the minors or put him on the IL and figure out what's going on with the shoulder or whatever it is. But that's not good enough, what we saw yesterday.
No. So it came out yesterday that the Nationals are open. They're the worst. They're bad. They're last in the East. the Nationals are willing to trade Scherzer. Now, I don't know that the asset, I mean, okay. Scherzer is the Verlander of 2021. You add Scherzer to this rotation with Fromber and Greinke and McCullers, or, and let's see, I mean, maybe Luis Garcia, or I don't know, but all of a sudden you add Scherzer, a top of the line, because this is a question. Do they they've got a number one starter, but do they have an ace?
No. Well, I think they do in Fromber.
In Fromber.
Yeah.
Now, is Fromber a dominant ace like a Cole or a Scherzer
right
or a Verlander?
I mean, his numbers would tell you, well, his numbers would tell you over the last eight, his sample size is going to be smaller. Over the last 8 to 10, the answer would be yes.
8 to 10 starts.
Yeah, because he only has a limited amount.
No, I get that. But are you going into the playoffs with Fromber as your ace?
Yes, you are.
As a dominant
team? Playing a game called, it's a little game that my daughter is playing, like, what if I won the lottery? The Astros have 0% chance of landing Scherzer. With what?
Well, that's, no. See, and that's, oh, you got some guys.
Well, on your team.
No, you got some guys in the minors. You got Siri, who's pretty damn good.
Do you have more than what someone else is willing to offer?
Well,
I doubt that. You cannot get in a shootout with minor league prospects with other major teams. I just don't think it's, the Astros minor leagues is considered one of the bottom three or four teams.
Let's not forget, Scherzer is he's in the last year, so he's going to be a free agent after this. He cost you $9 million, but Washington's going to have to get rid of him. Otherwise, they get nothing for him, a compensatory pick. But it's not like the market now. If a team is really going for it, like the teams that are really going for it, the Yankees don't need him. The Dodgers don't need him or wouldn't go after him. The Red Sox possibly would. Yeah, the Red Sox possibly would. They could use a Scherzer at the top of their rotation. Although Sale is coming back as well. I mean, of course, if Scherzer and Sale and the rest of the guys, that would be awfully nice. But that would be a move that. But don't put this past the Astros. The Astros gave up a load for Greinke
to win it.
Jim Crane. And Jim Crane would tell James Click, go get him.
It's a huge mistake to me. Huge mistake. Another rental, but even less so than for Zach Greinke. There's no question that a good pitcher makes you better. I mean, I'm not arguing that. I just think the price point of what you're asking an already depleted minor league system, and you're taking out one of your only, exciting hitters. I don't think starting pitching is a huge concern for you right now. Starting pitching, as the numbers would tell you, is a big strength for you. Your bullpen is your big concern. I'm just not a fan of trying to strengthen a strength at the expense of giving away your biggest minor league prospect right now. That to me just doesn't make a lot of sense where you are. That's not, you already are gutted, and I think you're good enough with your starting pitching. Now remember, once you get to the You're three or four starters max. Whenever you get to the playoffs, you're going to be bolstered by starting pitching in your bullpen. But I think your bullpen is the big concern right now. Yeah. I like the way you hit. I like your starting pitching. Your bullpen stinks.
Well, your bullpen stinks, but the more starting pitching you get, the more we saw it last year.
What about
year.
Targeting
Christian Javier okay. went to the bullpen? Guess what he did.
But what about targeting?
Look at this year, Christian Javier goes to the bullpen and look what he's doing.
I get that, but what about getting a bullpen pitcher for a lot less? Why give up your best prospect when you can give up way less for a guy who fits in your bullpen?
Well, yeah, I mean. Listen, you're still going to have to give up something. I mean,
yeah,
for a bullpen pitcher,
I'm finally
too.
Giving up something for a bullpen pitcher. I'm not finally giving up
one.
All your top prospects for a rental.
See, I wouldn't mind it at all. I wouldn't mind. This is a team that can win, and if you bolster it with an ace like Scherzer, you did it with Verlander. You tried to do it with Greinke. It didn't work out nearly as well. You went and got a Cole, and he turned into that. You didn't know he was going to be that, but he turned into that thanks to Strami and thanks to Spider Tack. But I wouldn't mind it at all. You pick up a shirt. You know what you do? You lift the whole boat comes up in the water when you bring a shirt.
Yeah, but I
that's
to
exactly
me,
what happened with Verlander.
I see a lot more of the some of the same potential effects as with Laramie Tunsil. I mean, it's different sport. The dynamics are different from an age standpoint, but the credit card spending that you're going to do will look good in the short term, but I think in the long term, it's really going to hurt you. You're just not in a position where you can give up your good minor league players. That really concerns me because you know you're going to lose Carlos. Carlos is going to be gone. Springer has been, you know, is gone. Altuve's getting older. If Siri has a chance to be special, I don't want Siri to leave. Yeah. I don't want a hitter like
Siri
that.
Siri or Leon?
Yeah, well, we have to see with Leon. He wasn't hitting last I checked.
Yeah, right.
He's just a guy
but
from.
He's had such an upside that you, who knows, you could use him.
That's
as
what
a piece.
They said.
But here's the deal. You know, Verlander and Scherzer are difference makers. I think this team has got a chance with 1 through 7. And I thought Charlie did it. I was listening to Charlie yesterday. He's calling them the Magnificent Seven. This lineup, 1 through 7, is magnificent. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you got a chance to do something big, maybe for the last time. With Carlos leaving, Springer's gone now. This is getting, you're closing in. That window is closing. And I wouldn't mind at all if you go after a Scherzer and you say, we're going for it again. I think you lift that clubhouse. I think you lift the whole city. You did it with Verlander. I could certainly see you doing it here.
I think the other thing is, while I'm not a huge proponent of it because the long term, I don't think your window's closing all that much with when you look at the players that you have in the young core with Tucker Bregman, Yordan, and I would say right now even Altuve. I mean, he's not showing signs of slowing down right now. You lose Correa, but most teams have 4 to 5 really good hitters.
Yeah,
and
Mike's only here for another year after this.
Who's that?
Uncle Mike. I mean,
No, I get all that, but I don't know. I'm just more importantly.
This isn't like Tunsil though. This is more like Verlander. More this importantly, ain't like Tunsil.
Well, more importantly, well, it's even less like that. It's more like Randy Johnson.
Okay. I mean, Randy Johnson turned them into the best team in baseball.
But the Astros bullpen, the Astros minor league system was in much better position, and you gave up two really good prospects who became all-stars elsewhere. But elsewhere, I mean, obviously for Seattle, but you do have I think the bigger problem is I don't see you outbidding another team. I think that you might be in the mix. I get that. But I think other teams who need starting pitching, the Astros don't need starting pitching.
No.
Other teams are desperate for starting pitching. I just think they're willing, and they're probably better, more capable of ponying up.
Yeah. Well, you could give up Paredes.
I haven't seen. I don't know what Click is all about. I honestly have no idea. I'm not even trying to. I'm not saying he won't do anything. I just haven't seen him do anything. He just doesn't even talk that much publicly. I guess he does a radio show. I don't listen to it.
No.
I don't. Do you ever see him speak on anything?
He doesn't make any headlines ever. That's for sure.
Never. So I don't know what he's all about, honest with you.
No, we haven't seen him do much, that's for sure.
Now, listen, the last guy, Jeff Leno, was a hold. What about the guy with domestic abuse stuff? Can we get him for cheaper? Good, let's take him. Like, no, that's not the move, Jeff.
No, that's not
Don't
it.
Do that.
Well, and then they learned their lesson with that. And Jeff Leno might have learned his lesson with that. It's not win at all costs. No, it's not. You can't. You can't win at all costs.
I agree. You cannot win at all costs.
No, But Scherzer, I don't think he's beaten anybody lately or anything.
Well, but I think that is at all costs. So when you know
no,
that Japan
that's
is
a different deal than getting Osuna. Good Lord.
No, but I'm saying that's also win at all costs stuff. Like you do have
to.
Yeah,
you go for
you
it.
Measure,
that's different than at all costs.
Well, but I don't like the phrase "go for it." That's the phrase that was used with Tunsil. The Texans are all
again
in
again with
now.
Tunsil. No, it was phrase used with Verlander.
The concept of being all in. You're using the good one. I'm using the other one. So they can both be right. They can both
yeah,
be.
Yeah, but Tunsil's a totally different deal. He's one guy out of 11, and he's a left tackle. Scherzer's an ace
they
in
They overpaid
rotation.
For a guy who was going to be on the – he was also young and in his prime. That's not Scherzer.
Well, no, he's not. That's right, and neither was Verlander. I mean, it's more Verlander than it is Tunsil.
Once again, I'm just going to stay with this. I could help the team by getting an inexpensive bullpen guy than giving my best prospect up for a rental. I just think that makes more financial sense. I think that you gotta weigh the expense of both and what you got a good starting line you pitch. What are you going to do about your bullpen? Except other than the idea that you're just bumping guys down. How about just go get a bullpen pitcher and keep Siri? That seems like a good move, too.
I mean, how they won, who came in? Charlie Morton, Lance McCullers, they both came in.
You're not
in.
Replicating that team.
Well, this would give you plenty of good arms. You're not going to to the pen, and or Charlie, Luis Garcia to
and
the
Charlie,
pen.
Charlie had a really good game.
Or Odorizzi to the pen.
Odorizzi might just be not a very good pitcher. We'll see. I mean, I don't think Odorizzi is going to be Charlie Morton. I don't think he's going to be Lance McCullers in those seasons.
Well, hopefully he gets better as the season goes on. I'm really hoping that. Actually.
I mean, obviously I would love
because you've got
having
him here for.
I would love
a
having Scherzer,
years.
But Scherzer's not. You're going to have major competition for Scherzer.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, just like
it's going to be really expensive because he'll be the top dog in the on the trade front.
I'm going to tell you this. You just watch. You just watch when Scherzer's in that Astros uniform. You just watch and see, and then you're going to be happy. Then he's going to say, "Oh, I love that move."
Well, he better go eight every time he's out there, because I don't care how well he pitches. There's a chance that what we saw last night happens in the playoffs multiple times.
Well, no, again, people get pushed down. People get pushed into the bullpen.
But Christian Javier can go once. If
no,
he's going to go
Garcia
three innings,
moves into the pen. Now Urquidy moves into the pen.
Why we don't know if Urquidy will handle coming in for an inning.
Yeah, Urquidy still has to. Yeah, that's still something that has to be proven.
We are hoping
Garcia
that guys
as
who
well.
Yeah. We're hoping that guys replicate what happened in 2017 with completely different pitchers.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Let's do it. Okay. 728 ESPN.
As long as everything's the same way, sure. Then make the move.
713-780-3776. Some actually good games in the NBA last night. We'll talk about them on the other side right here. Don't go anywhere.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Brown misses a tether football, the rebound. Out to Holiday. 16 seconds remaining.
And deciding not to call a timeout.
Holiday spin move, gets inside. Lance scores! It's good! And the Bucks go up by one with 11.4. Struggling all night long offensively with one of the biggest buckets for the Bucks. Out to Durant. Durant, one dribble, fires it up. Oh, back of the rim. Jubilation here in Milwaukee. The Bucks are right back in the series.
So, 86-83? Did 1984 call and say we need our basketball game back?
It was there was a lot of misses. It was good defense. Like it was, I tell you what, it was a good game. It was a fun game to watch in the sense that it was so tight and there were so many. Just because the score, it's just like there can be a really good 1-0 baseball game. You know, people are like, oh, so boring, 1-0. No, it depends on the flow of the game. Like there can be really great 1-0 games if pitchers are dueling.
This was old school.
You had what I thought was I had that game paused and the Astros paused, and I went back and forth during commercials so I could watch both of them because they were both highly enthralling to me to watch. I mean, Astros for a different reason, obviously, but the Bucks were just trying to hang in as long as they could, and it's funny because the Nets kept hanging around. And then the Bucks got ice cold. The Nets got ice cold when it got tied up. Like no one could make a basket for 10 or 11 straight possessions. And then all of a sudden, before you knew it, Chris Middleton starts forcing way. And Chris Middleton had a lot of success last night with isolations. But the ISOs started getting to be, I thought really bad shot selection with some of his ISOs. And then all of a sudden, I think it was Brown hits a three. It was KD hit the three, a tough three. And they're up by three. And I was like, I cannot believe the Bucks just blew this. But then the Bucks did a great job of forcing the ball out of KD's hands and putting it into Joe Harris's hands, who started bricking. They did a good job of getting on the defensive boards And then that play that Dell played, the Drew Holiday spin dribble around, you know, the little spin move around the defender was fantastic, man. It was a great, great play. And when it was all said and done, and Kevin Durant, I mean, obviously it's not a visual, it's an audio. That shot that he had from about 34 feet away, oh, I mean, it was back iron. It was not off by much.
Yeah.
And a good win for the Bucks. It's 2-1. Now all of a sudden the series looks a little different, as it does in basketball. 2-0, it looked like, oh, the Bucks are done. Then they win a tight one, and they would have been done down 3-0. Now they win a tight one, and now everyone's saying, well, what's James' status? I mean, he's basically been out three games. What's his status? Hamstrings don't heal right away.
No,
hamstrings take time.
You know, now probably that is what that will kick him in, because they're, you know what, if we don't have to play him, we're up 2-0. If we go up 3-0,
my guess is at home. My guess is at home.
He can sit. He can sit. And it'll be fun. Unless it's bad.
What if it's bad and he's out for the series? Is there a concern now? I mean, Middleton, Chris Middleton was an atrocity the first two games. I mean, truly atrocious. Yesterday was a better version of Chris Middleton.
Well, he cut back on his threes. I mean, he was 3 for 6 as opposed to, you know, shooting up 10, 11, 12 of them.
Well, he
went Russell Westbrook on it, saying, you know what, I haven't been any good against these guys. But how much from three.
You may not have watched that one.
Yeah,
okay, so you saw he was attacking.
Yeah.
Like, he was in attack mode, mid-range mode.
That was like Russ did when Russ got good.
But he got 5 threes up in the first two quarters. Like, 5 of his threes were up. No, he was 3 for 3. Early in the second quarter, and then he was 3 for 5. So he shot a lot less threes in the second half than in the first. Because in the first half, he had 5 threes in the first half, and that's when he scored his points, and he was actually really good. Giannis kind of took over in the second half, but because Giannis wasn't as good in the first half. But I'm not ready to write the Bucks off just yet, and I'll tell you why. This James injury may be more substantial than people think. For him to miss this much time, James, the guy who plays typically, this could be something, especially with hamstring injuries, that if and when they bring him back, it just flares up again. Most of the time, those injuries flare up again. Chris Paul, Anthony Davis, with his injury, his was groin, right? But that soft tissue injury. I don't think James is a lock to come back and be just fine and the hamstring injury is gone. That takes a couple weeks. I'm not sure James is going to sit out a...
Here's the only problem with it is that this is such an anomaly. When are you going to have the Nets shooting 36% and 25 from three?
Well, that's what the Bucks did the first two games.
Well, that's
an anomaly
what the Bucks
too.
Do, but this is the Nets.
No.
The Nets are a better team.
No, the Bucks don't do that. The Bucks don't shoot 33%. The Bucks had the anomaly games in game one and game
not
two.
Not really. They
saying.
Shot 37% and 19 from three. They're...
Who?
The Bucks did last night. How do you win a game when you shoot 19% from three and 38%
from
the
game? Well, you defend.
Yeah. Well, or but the Nets were just
you
not.
You see how
the
many
Nets
points.
Were missing. And the Nets aren't going to miss like this. I don't
know.
Well,
I thought the Bucks did a good job defensively. I thought they were handling Kevin Durant pretty well until he got hot. But they took away the rest of the team. Like, the rest of the team was not a major factor.
Well, Harris was 1 for 11.
I don't think you're going to see the Nets. The Nets played A-plus basketball the first two games. That's how you win by 40 over a good team like the Bucks. And the Bucks played terrible. I just mentioned how bad Chris Middleton was.
Yeah.
Chris Middleton plays better. Giannis plays good. The rest of the team didn't shoot the ball well, but they defended better. I'm just saying, if they get a win and they go 2-2, if they get a win in the next one, they go 2-2, I don't think it's a lock that James is back, because hamstrings take more time, or they're just begging James to re-injure, re-aggravate, and it could keep him out longer. I still like the Nets to win the series, but I don't think that one's over. It's also hard to say the Clippers series is over with them down too, because they've been highly competitive in both games. Highly competitive in both games.
It's interesting.
By the way, Jazz won last night.
Yeah, Jazz won again. 117 to 111 was the final there. Paul George, Kendrick Perkins was on before us, and he said, Paul George ain't, they were giving him the business too. Where did they go? They were playoff P? They were giving him some playoff P chance, overrated. Kendrick Perkins on the show before us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 was saying, he ain't the Robin on that team. The Robin's Reggie Jackson. Paul George is what he is. We got to stop expecting this guy to be. You are what you are. And maybe this is what Paul, not that he was horrible. He was 8 for 18. He had 27 points, but he was minus 12 on the court last night. He is what he is, and he's not a great number two. And I don't know that Paul George is ever going to win big. And maybe they're realizing that now. There is that what Paul George is and what he brings to the table. But you fall behind again. Are you going to continue to dig out of these 0-2 ruts?
It's hard. That's why I wonder if they can do it again. Like, they're not out of this.
This
by
is
any
a
stretch,
better team,
but this is a team that's not
Dallas.
That's probably not going to. This isn't a team full of Kristaps Porzingis and one really really good, you know, one really really good superstar. It's Utah's got a few guys that can rise to the occasion. I'm kind of with you on this one. There's got to be some fatigue setting in for the Clippers. Like, man, this again. How many times can you get up and then over a hill?
Right.
At some point, the hill becomes too much.
And this is a better team. This team is really good.
Kind of feel like they needed to steal one in Utah to win this series. Yep. They needed to get it and tilt it in their favor early.
Has Clarkson won the fifth man yet? The sixth man round?
Hasn't been announced yet.
He's going to win it, right? Is Clarkson going to win it?
He is the favorite, yeah.
You would assume. I don't really know who the top three are, because I don't know if they – I'm sure they would have released it like they did the other stuff, but I'm not sure if they
– It's got to be coming out soon.
Is that unusual for – he's 29 years old for a player that age to win sixth man nowadays?
No, Lou Williams won it later.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Lou had to be close to – he was probably in his 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
Cam, our intern, said he already won, so –
Jordan Clarkson. They announced that award.
I didn't
already?
See that one.
Oh yeah, because Rudy was Defensive Player of the Year.
I know,
Rudy
Gobert. But you would think that we would. I haven't heard that. I mean, it was bound to happen. But I didn't hear the announcement.
May 25th.
Oh, that's old.
Quiet.
Yeah. That's yeah,
a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Anyway, so at least we had a couple of good games, right?
Yeah, The NBA playoffs have been on a night to night basis have been stinky, and whether it's the Clippers because of their want to turn it on and off in the middle of the games, it's providing some drama. We appreciate it. Thank you for competing. I will give the Clippers credit for not folding. There have been both games where they've been down double digits in the third and the fourth quarter, and they fought back. And the question is, why are you down by that amount considering who you're supposed to be? But yeah, we had two good games, and we'll see what happens tonight. Who do we have tonight? Sixers, Hawks. Is that series back on tonight?
Denver. Denver's like 2-point favorite, and then you have the other one, Sixers and Hawks. Sixers are like a 1.5-point favorite at the Hawks. Not sure what to think in that one. You got a hot Embiid right now. I mean, the entire game could rest on how you defend.
Atlanta's open, defend, right? It's gonna be a full house.
I don't know the number, but yeah, they're a place that doesn't have the same
Didn't
restrictions.
Boston looked
as
like it was sold out. By the way, the Red Sox game—they say they had 23,000. That they were at 67% capacity.
No,
I swear to you, it looked like that place was packed out.
I don't think so. And
didn't it feel like it was packed?
No. And the other night, I was like, look at all these empty seats.
Well, I can tell you this.
Well, it was late in the game, though, too. So
yeah. That thing looked. I thought it looked awfully crowded yesterday, and they said they were only at 23,000, 60-some-odd%. Now, I'll tell you what was packed out, Milwaukee. Milwaukee's got, I didn't see the attendance. That's got to be 100%.
Milwaukee Phoenix, Utah, all have been.
Oh, my gosh. Milwaukee was so loud. I couldn't even hear Van Gundy at times yesterday. And Phoenix, forget about it. Phoenix is the most rowdy group. And I don't know if you guys have caught this while watching. Have y'all noticed how many shots they have of teenagers who are at the game, like groups of five or six, or you know, 14 to 18-year-old kids who are going crazy wearing the jerseys, boys, girls. That group is going to be a loud, loud, loud group. But I just noticed for some reason, and I feel like it's intentional by the NBA to show young people in the crowd. There's all these cutaways to groups of younger fans going crazy when their teams do well, especially with the Phoenix Suns. But I noticed it with Milwaukee at the end of the game yesterday as well. I don't know if this is like the NBA's intentionally wants to, you know, from a marketing standpoint, wants to show you all the young people there. But I'm not used to it. Man, playoff tickets are expensive. All I can think of when I see that many young kids, I'm like, man, whose parents are paying that much for their kids to go to playoff games?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I ain't doing that.
I did it once. Houston, Golden State.
Well, they hadn't had to pay for them all year, so maybe they had some discretionary income.
Yeah, maybe that is. And it's how weird is it to go from like 2,000 fans to 15,000
fans?
Well,
the Bucks' normal capacity is a little over 17,300, and they had 16,300 last night. So they're at about 94% capacity. So almost a full house. So, yeah, they're loading up.
Yeah, and, oh, by the way, Phoenix fans, ever see the Phoenix Open? The 16th hole?
You think it's the same type of
lunatics?
They're lunatics.
Those people aren't right in the head.
Those people are awesome.
Those people are on the verge of being arrested in a... Well, now they think they're part of, like, that's their whole identity.
It's the whole deal.
Like, you going to 16, bro?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll be at 16. I'll see you there, bro.
You got to wait in line. If you don't have a suite there, you got to wait in line. They get there. Trust me, they run to that 16th hole. All right, 744 ESPN 97.5.
Party hole.
That's a little jab at them. Why are you taking jabs at them?
Sitejab.com. They came up in a discussion the other day with a national company that I'm in discussions with about a football site that I have. And I was discussing Sitejab. I said, listen, I've got somebody local for front-end stuff that I want to – I know you guys have developers, but I want to work through Hector and get pricing from Hector and my people over at Sitejab. Because here's the thing. I don't know about the other companies group. It seems like they do fantastic work from their own website. I know what my guy Hector and Sitejab does. They've been in business for over two decades. They have the ability to really update and upgrade your website and keep it as current as you could possibly imagine. But they do so much more than web face build outs, front end design. They can handle back end stuff for you. They can handle e-commerce and including that in your site. They can also take advantage you can take advantage of their ability to help you with branding, video production, video integration on your site. I mean, they're so much more than just a website company. They offer a full suite of products to help you bolster your business and help the people who come to your website, you know, excite them about what your product is and really convey what your product is to them so that you can turn them and convert them, those eyes, into business leads. So make sure that you visit my friends at Sitejab. So many Houstonians and ESPN 97.5 listeners have done that. Go to sitejab.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Prescription products.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, how about a send-off for Jonathan Joseph? Jonathan Joseph announced his retirement from the game.
Good Texan.
He and Aaron Glenn, the best two corners in Texans history.
Yep. AG didn't get a play, but about 3 or 4 years, but he was that good. I think, does Kareem get in that conversation? Terrible first year, improved rapidly after that, was solid after that. J. Joe is the best based on amount of time served.
Yeah.
With the Texans.
I'm going to go J. Joe because of 9 years.
Yep.
Then I'm going to go Aaron Glenn.
Wait. Was J. Joe 9 years with the Texans?
With the Texans.
Holy crap.
Then Aaron Glenn, then Kareem, and then Petey. Petey.
DeMarcus Fagans. For those who say, who's Petey? Don't worry about it.
Don't worry. If you're not a good cornerback, your first name's Petey.
He was terrible. So let's rehash just for a second. Jonathan Joseph, coming out of college, out of South Carolina, known as a weed guy, multiple tests, positive tests, I guess, or at least that's what NFL teams told me. He's a little bit of a dope guy, could be a problem. And started off with Cincinnati. They let him get away as a free agent. And the Texans were coming off a season in 2010 where they showed a lot of promise. They had the running game going. That was Arian Foster's rookie year, right, in 2010. Yeah, it was, because Arian Foster had just came out of nowhere and was doing a great job. Your offensive line started to really come together as well. You had a young Mike You had Purcell and Eric Winston and Chris Myers and Dwayne Brown, and that was a good offensive line. Andre Johnson still in his prime, but you kept losing. You lost your secondary, played so bad. A big part of it was Kareem Jackson. He was so bad in the secondary, really the entire secondary. They give up a Hail Mary to the Jacksonville Jaguars that turns into a loss. The Texans won, I think they won six games that year, but they must have blown a minimum of four that should have been wins. And you could tell they had some ability. They had some young core talent. They just didn't know how to win, and they were really blowing it. And so in the offs, so there is a lockout at the time, or a lockout. I think it was an owner lockout of the players, and there was strife in terms of, you know, the what was going on from a collective bargaining standpoint. The Texans were looking really, really closely at Nnamdi Asamoah. That's who they wanted.
What a wonderful decision to take J.J.
So here's the deal. Nnamdi, and they went with Nnamdi the whole time, and at some point they started to become aware that Nnamdi may not be a Houston Texan, and that's when Wade Phillips stepped in, and Wade had been hired that year to take over as defensive coordinator. Wade had not coached in 2010 for the Texans, but he came in. And what I was told was, and I have had this confirmed by Wade, is that Wade's one of the ones who stepped in and kind of helped with J.J. and Daniel Manning. Now, remember, you could have Nnamdi Asamoah, or you could, for that same money, have Jonathan Joseph and Daniel Manning. And here's what I heard. I heard it from another team, and I asked Wade Phillips about it, and he kind of said, yeah, because this is not exactly legal either. During the lockout, where you're not supposed to have any contact, the story I heard was that Wade was working out both J.J., Jonathan Joseph, and Daniel Manning when they weren't for any particular team, just kind of trying to get a feel for these two players and, you know, keep them sharp and get a feel for whether or not he thought they would make sense for the Texans. And that's exactly what ended up happening. He ended up, you know, the Texans ended up saying, all right, let's let Nnamdi go. Let's start our focus here, because Wade did the homework. And Wade Phillips was actually a really big part in helping Rick Smith determine the strategy of, and Gary Kubiak, determine the strategy of letting Asamoah go and instead going for two players, Daniel Manning and Jonathan Joseph. You know what? It ended up being, if it was just Jonathan Joseph, it was the right play. And the tricky thing was, Nnamdi Asamoah had one season when he had ball production. The rest of it, he had no ball production. Jonathan Joseph had more ball production more consistently, and he ended up being a really good Houston Texan. And Daniel Manning, for that little window they had for 11 and 12, was a really good fit for them. He could guard in the slot. He was a good safety. He was a good return man. So Manning was part of that move, but Jonathan Joseph ended up being the headliner, and that was the little part that Wade Phillips played, is he kind of said, hey, this is, you know, from what I've been told, I kind of like these two guys better than just the one guy. One. So if you guys don't want to go with Nnamdi Asamoah, these two guys would be great fits. And Wade kind of helped line them up and get them ready so that when free agents struck, boom, they had both of them signed and ready to go. So look at Wade. Look at son of bum just getting it done. Was it tampering? I don't know. You know, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Well,
tampering, it's just such a gray area to me.
Well, not if they free agent. You're
during a lockout. It doesn't feel like free agency during a lockout is a gray area. But you know what? Things happen.
Stuff happens.
You know what? Trash cans get hit. Whatever.
Whoa.
Some of you guys have spider tack. Whatever.
I
talked to Nnamdi and told Nnamdi that. No, you had said that to him, and got the safety Daniel Manning, but you had also got Jonathan Joseph.
That question is too hard to answer. It's just way too. That question is
9 years of JJ.
I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest.
9 years of JJ. That was a good buy.
Yeah,
good free agent.
It was a great buy. No, best free agent the Texans have ever signed.
Easily,
not even close. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, not even close. I mean, 9 years at quarterback play.
Yeah, at a quality level, above average level the whole time. Yeah, that is the That's the very definition of it. You got 9 years. I mean, how did the Bengals let him go? I'm trying to remember what was going on with the Bengals. I mean, I think he may have got popped. Did he get popped and suspended with the Bengals? Why would you let a young corner go like that before second contract?
I don't know.
Did he take issue at one point with their Gatorade distribution or something? Wasn't there a story about how you had to bring your own drinks to play for the Bengals?
Yeah, so, you know, if you question how economically what happens with the Browns, the Brown family, economically, you're out of there. You can't do that.
I feel like once he got here, he told a story about how you were limited or had to bring your own drinks or something.
Yeah. And they wouldn't refrigerate them or something.
Something like that.
Let me see.
Because that costs, you know, the electricity of refrigerate. Yeah. I remember that too.
We're told how much Gatorade we could take home. In Houston, we get what we request. So it was Jonathan. It was like, hey, you get two. Sorry, guys. That's the limit.
You got to drink them here. You can't take those with you.
Yeah, you can't take them home.
You can't take that with you.
Yeah.
Let's see what this is about. Larry wants to suggest a topic for the show.
All right.
Larry?
We'll take it.
Let's see if Larry's a better producer than you, Del.
Okay.
All right?
Sure.
Hey Larry.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, like, if you wanted to rank the most hated people in Houston sports. Currently, I guess it would be Jack Easterby. But in history, like a Mount Rushmore, I know the Blitz hates Mount Rushmore questions. But in Houston sports history, I guess Bud Adams would be right there at the top. Bill O'Brien, maybe you can think of some others who... I'm not talking like Albert Pujols. I'm talking someone who is a sports figure.
One of our own.
Houston. And, maybe...
Dave Clark?
Of the most hated sports figures.
Poor Dave Clark.
Well, John, you heard the idea. What do you think? Is that a better thing than anything I put on the rundown today?
Yes, it's much better.
Mount Rushmore.
Did you put any Rushmores on the rundown?
Do you think about Rushmore?
Mount Rushmore of hate.
Astros going on and NBA playoffs.
That's a better topic. I love that.
With the college football expansion stuff that came out.
Nah, I feel like expansion talk is better.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, playoff.
Guys,
actually,
wait till July for our Mount Rushmores, okay? Let's do a week just called Mount Rushmore.
Let's lean into it. Be wonderful.
Let's do that. Let's lean into it. No, Larry, we got to wait for the dog days of summer.
Yeah.
We've still got playoffs. We got Astros baseball, college football playoffs.
Before we do Mount Rushmore, we got to do LeBron versus Michael.
Yeah, we'll do that again. We'll update that now that LeBron's been out of the playoffs.
Yeah, now that he's knocked out in the first round, which Michael didn't after he started winning championships.
Look, one day you're gonna open up that doc and you're gonna be like, what the did Del do? And everything is going to be
Rushmore of
everything. You're like, well, took Larry's advice.
I think you hit on most of them anyway, Larry.
Used to be O'Brien Adams. Yes. Yeah.
Well done, Larry. You just did the segment.
You got it. You got that on. You got that.
We could do Mount Rushmore of hate when it really gets slow in the summer. We'll do Mount Rushmore of hate from a. We'll do it from a either a team standpoint. We'll do an organizational. Then we'll do a full city. Then we'll do a decade. So we can really, like I said, I think this can go along. I think we can get a whole week out of it.
Yeah, out of hate. Okay.
Yeah.
When we come back, though, Del mentioned, and there's some interesting aspects of the college football playoff with 12 teams. We got it on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.